Chip, thank you. The format of the meeting tonight is one main speaker. Our speaker tonight is my brother from another mother, who comes to us from the Going to Any Lengths group located in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Please help me welcome Byron L.
Participate in the meeting about hearts and hearts. And thank you for allowing me to do that. And I want to thank my wife for driving down with me and, most of all, telling me how to drive all the way. But I love her. We're some busy folks in our hearts and hearts. And we don't get to spend much time together. But it was one of those times that we needed some little time together and just kind of reflect on some things. And we had the opportunity to do that. And thank you. And I was sitting there thinking, and I was Mike and Karen's daughter, hey, there is some ties, some heritage here that I've had the privilege and honor of knowing since I've been so. And I've been knowing that young lady. Wow. Well, she was a wee little one. And I look at that relationship, and I look at that. And if you'd have told me when I came out to Hearts and Hours that I would have been able to have a relationship long term, I would have told you there's no way. Because that ain't what I came here for. That's not what I came here for. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get the heat off, really. y'all was going to help a brother out. I heard about sponsorship, but I thought sponsorship is that, oh man, they're going to give you a place to stay, they're going to help you get a car, a job, you know. Nah. And it took me many years for me to get to the point where I surrendered. I was telling Mike earlier, I did some drinking in this area, back in the 80s. And I tell you, the last time I remember drinking in this area, I had just got out of rehab. And I had a thought. And the thought was that, you know, generally, we time our trip by the cases. We make it from Ardmore. I'm from Chickasha, Oklahoma, everyone. I can say that. And I don't have a law looking for me anymore, so I don't know. I can say that with some freedom there. And we used to time our trips from Chickasha to Ardmore. That's one case. And then from Ardmore to Dallas, that's another case. And a little something, something, you know. And that's the way that we rode. And I remember I had just got out of the treatment center, and things weren't too good at the house. And a friend of mine came by. He said, you know, I'm going to go to Dallas. I'm going to go to the West End. And I said, you know, I'd like to go with you, but I'm not drinking. And what happened? Is the mic on there, Mike? Did I do something?
Don't have one of those.
Okay. All right. I can do that. Thank you. lowest points in my life, you know, I just got out, I think it was my third treatment center. And I said, you know, I wasn't convinced that Alcoholics Anonymous was the answer at this point in time. And all I knew is that I had to get away from her. And she was what she said, yak, 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 and on me all the time, and I just had to get away. And a friend of mine said, you know, we're going to go to West End, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to go. And I had every intention not to drink that night. But what happened? What happened is that I look back on that yesterday today and that moment, that night, and I didn't have, it talks about the phenomenon of craving. Now, in order to identify with that, I have to experience that. Now, if you've asked me, at that point in time, I was suffering from the phenomenon of craving. I would have told you, you're crazy. But what has happened is that I remember we're getting to the first stop. The first stop was at one bar. And I remember the music going. And once the music started going and I started to settle down in the crowd a little bit, and her began to get farther and farther back in my mind. Those problems, everything that I've been running from, began to seem farther and farther. And then suddenly I thought, you know what, Byron? And surely it can't get as bad as it did 60 days ago. 60 days prior to that night, I took a drink. I went to go get some milk for our youngest one, and I took a drink. And I was gone for about a week. And I ended up in rehab. I don't know about that. When I drink, I go places, people. But make a long story short, that night, I remember saying, you know, surely it can't get that bad. And then I remember taking the drink. And I said, you know, I don't believe all this stuff they've been telling me, that I'm a real alcoholic, and, you know, and this AA junk. That's all. And let me tell you, if you're new out there and if you've been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. You know, I look back on that and thank God that I, for whatever reason, in that period of time, they used to send you to AA meetings. And thank God for that. I look back on that today. Now, back then, I didn't think it was a good idea because I thought you people were crazy. Y'all need AA. See, I don't need that. See, my problem is if she just keep her mouth shut and let Byron drink where he want to drink, when he want to go, when he want to go, and where he want to go, and who he want to see on my terms, everything will be okay. And the job, if they just let me come in anytime I want, and not dock me for being late all the time, you know, everything will be okay. About the second drink I had, it happened. The magic happened to the alcohol. And what had happened is that I started to just let it go, man. And I remember it wasn't no shutting off. If you had told me right then and there that I was phenomenon of craving selling me, I would have told you, no, this feels good. This is life. This is how it ought to be. Free, fun, do whatever you want. The very thing that came back to cut me in the ribbons right there. And I didn't understand that process. Got out of that, I remember when I got back home, she wasn't too happy. And we tried a relationship again, and that lasted for about another 6 months. And I don't know what happened. I started going around Alcoholics Anonymous again, and setting your meetings and not doing nothing, just sitting in your meetings. I didn't get a sponsor. I wouldn't work the steps. I didn't get a home group. And the reason I'm sharing this experience with you is that it's my experience. I've been on the fringes of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. My first experience with Alcoholics Anonymous was in 83. And you know my sobriety date is 93. So it took 10 years for me to convince that I was a real alcoholic. And that I had to get off my keister and do something different. I had to get a sponsor and I had to work the steps in order to survive. But it took what it took. And only through God's grace I made it back to you good people. And I was willing to do the things that it took to stay sober one day at a time. But within those 10 years, let me tell you, I fought it. I fought this out. I fought it. I did not want to be an alcoholic tonight. I did not go to my high school counselor and say, you know what, I want to be a good member of AA. Or I just want to rip the hearts out of the people that love me and steal their happiness and the joy from these people. And that's what I do. I ruin the lives of the people I come in contact with. And here's the sad thing about it. I live in that delusional world to where I believe my head that I'm only hurting Byron. I believe that. And I don't know what other you can. That is a death warrant. I mean, I tell you, and I lived like that for a long time. I lived like that for a long time. One of the next to the last time that I ended up in that ward, let me tell you, I went on a 3-day binge and I broke in the house and stole all everything. And it was, I don't know anything worse than having a family looking for you when you're on the binge. And I used to hide out in some pretty weird places. And the family was looking out for me because they heard that what I've done and I broke in the house and stole everything and blah, blah, blah. And I ended up in a nut ward in Los Angeles, California. Like I tell you, I go places, but I don't. When I drank, I go places. And I ended up in this nut ward in Los Angeles, California. And it's one of the first times to where I really was starting to think that something was really wrong with me. I wasn't convinced I was alcoholic at this point in time. But something, I mean, something is going on with your body. And I seen some things in that place where people were actually doing some weird things. Like swatting flies when there wasn't no flies and talking to themselves and doing weird things, and I'm like, man, I got to get out of here. These people need to be here. And little did I know, as I stayed in there a little bit longer, as I detoxed, I mean, the place was a good place. Don't get me wrong. But they did not, you know, they rarely talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing is that it was, the thing that I like about it was co-ed. You get to mingle with the girls. And I remember about 3 weeks into that place, I've had enough. I had to drink. And this is several years ago. Back then, I was a lot thinner than I am now. I could fit through the bars, and so I squeezed through the bars of the gate and escaped. I was like Jimmy Dean. I get resentment at people like Jimmy Dean. They stay small, you know. I'm like, the older I get, the wider I get, but. I escaped that place. And I went to join my cousin, which they sold, they was hanging out with these gangsters and these gangs up there, and I began to do the same old things that I've done there prior to even going in that place. And the only thing that saved me is that I had good insurance. In order for them to pay, I had to go back and I had to make amends to the people and blah, blah, blah. And I did some things out there that, you know, I don't know about you, I always used to say, you know, if I get to a certain point or if I get like so-and-so, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to change my life, I used to say. I'm a big guy, you know. And every time I reached that point, I would take myself down to a lower notch. And I would hang out with some other people and justify that. And so, I met a young lady in there. She was rich. That's the problem. That's the answer to all my problems. If I can just get the right her and enough money, everything, all my problems can be fixed. And you really think about that. One nut meet another nut in a nut board, you think that's going to work out. That's my thinking. That's the best I got. But she was nice. She was a nice lady. But at this point in time, me and my wife, my first wife, we still wasn't separated. I'll make a long story short. I ended up getting out of that place and come back to Oklahoma. And she got in contact with my wife. And when I got here, they were sitting at the kitchen table. And that's not a good setting. And my wife, she hadn't had enough. She was done. She was done. And by God, she had every right. She should have been done years ago. And I moved out and moved to New Jersey. And so I went from Los Angeles, California to New Jersey within a 2-week time. And hung out with those good people up there. And they were some real good people. He just wasn't alcoholic. And let me tell you, when I started back drinking, the most I've stayed sober was probably 30 days. And I was one of those, when I got through a church and doing my commitments there, I would go back to my room and drink. And not only that, there's a part in that book that talks about the isolation. And I know that isolation now. I know what that means, living in that isolation, that alcoholic isolation. I know what that means today. And I remember, no matter how much I drank, I couldn't get the ghost and the memories from running out on those two little girls that I had. No matter how much I drank, I couldn't turn it off. But what I do, I don't know about you, I'm one of these alcoholics that I don't know, I have a tendency to build up some friendship here and there, and then when they find out who I am, I run. And then I steal something from them, maybe. And then I go and get another group of people, and then they find out who I am, and then I run. The sad thing about that is that you run out of people. And at this point in time of my drinking, I believe that, and I don't know it at the point in time, at this point in time, that I'm getting near the end of my drinking. And make a long story short, she got tired of me and kicked me out, and I moved back to Oklahoma. And let me tell you, those lives, that last year and a half of my drinking, if there's a hell on earth, I believe that's where I was at. At this point in time, I'm not wanting to be around anybody. I just want to drink. I just want to drink by myself. And maybe if you've got something, go around you and take from you and live that type of life. At this point in time, I'm not working anymore. And I've always been a person, I thought, at one point in time, that had some good working values. And when I first got out of high school, my kid's mother got pregnant with our oldest daughter, and I had a choice to. Well, I didn't have a choice. I had to go to work to support that kid. My mom was from the old school. She didn't go to Alabama. She was from the old school, man. She said, no, I'm not taking care of no kid. You're going to work. And but I started working probably when I was 10 or 11. And I had some good working days. And I worked on that one job for about 12 years now. And I drank that job away. After they sent me to four treatment centers, they had enough. They had had enough. And I look back on that deal, and there's some real good people that tried to help me. But they just didn't. My case was different. My case was different. And I wouldn't tell you that, but my actions would say that. My case is different. And no matter how much you try to help me, I push you farther and farther away. And so, like I said, I really believe that the last year and a half of my drinking was pretty bad. At this point in time of my life, nobody allowed me to come. Nobody allowed me really to come and hang out with them other than my mother and my grandmother. Only two places I could sleep. And then my mother began to get sick, and she was in the hospital one day. And I remember drinking, and while my mom's in the hospital, I go and rob her blood. She asked the kind of person I am. See, if you'd have told me, from now on, craving that said, there ain't no stopping you, I'd have told you, no, I got to. This is my right to do this. And so, things began to get pretty bad, and my drinking began to escalate, and I really believe that at this point in time of my life, there's only two options. Either keep drinking the way that I'm drinking or blow my brains out. Now, I don't know about you. I heard over the years, if I remember as a kid, I remember that preacher talking about if you commit suicide, you're going to hell. I remember that. So that wasn't an option. So I'm a drink. So, what I do is drink. I ended up in Norman, Oklahoma. And if you'd have told me that on November the 10th, 1993, that would be the last time that I have a drink of alcohol, I would have told you. You probably not. That's not true. But I remember waking up that morning and I was on my grandmother's couch. And I look back and I look at that deal and I'm like, man, my last drink was a Keystone beer. What a wuss, you know? Why come up there and go out on some Jack or some Old Charlie, you know, my favorite drink, you know? But I remember waking up on that Sunday morning. I remember talking to my mother, my grandmother, and I said some of the hardest, I think the hardest words an alcoholic can say is that I need help. I think I need help in order to, now they heard this plenty of times. Why is this any different than the previous four times? Why is this any different? I have no idea. But my mother, my grandmother, they took me to Norman, Oklahoma. To that detox and then that ward there. And stayed in there for 2 weeks. And I remember on a Saturday night, pretty much, like this meeting here, back then they had a program. First of all, the place that I was at, they're no longer open anymore. They closed it down but due to state funding. But see, at this point in time, I'm a state man. I don't have anything going for me, I'm living off the state, I remember a gentleman had graduated from there a year prior, and he came to tell his story. And I'll never forget that Saturday night. I heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I seen the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the first time, it was okay to be an alcoholic. And it took what it took. And I'll never forget that when that gentleman got through, I talked to him and I said, man, that sounds so much like my story. So if you know out there, and if you hear something that I say tonight, and you can relate to it, man, that is just the power and the words of God to connect us, to say, there's a way out. There's a way out. I don't ever have to live that way again. The next meeting that they used to take us to outside meetings there at that facility, and they used to take us to the Phoenix group there in Norman. And I never forget Baxter's first sponsor come up to me. They tell you to get a temporary sponsor, but I'm still not quite sure about you people yet. So I didn't get a temporary sponsor. But this gentleman pulled me aside and he said, Byron, what are you going to do when you get out of here? I said, well, Calvin, I think I'm going to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma. He said, well, before I give you this, I got a number, I got a contact with for you when you go to Tulsa, if you decide to go. But before you take this number, you got to be serious. And I didn't know that number is going to be my sponsor's number for the next almost 20 years. I didn't know that. All I knew is that I was going to have to do something different prior of what I've done prior to coming out of Arch Lounge before. At this point in time, I was willing to move. I was willing to go to my move here. You know how you meet your AA buds and rehab and detox? You're going to save the world. I met these guys, and they was telling me about this halfway house there in Tulsa, and come to find out it wasn't a halfway house. It was a boarding house, and they called it Woody's Wine House, 523 North Boulder. And let me tell you, it was the last house on the block, other than sleeping under the bridge. And I don't know that at the time, but I remember getting off that bus there in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and finding Woody's Wine House, and I looked at that place, and I'm like, wow. I think they lied to me. But anyway, make a long story short, I stayed in there, and a couple of days later, I called my sponsor. And all I knew about my sponsor was that he was serious about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I left the message that I'm serious and I hung the phone up. I didn't leave my name, number, anything. See, back then, they didn't have cell phones. They may have, but I didn't have one. But I never forget the first night that I met my sponsor. It was on Friday evening. And he came. Picked me up, and there was something different about Dave than it was Calvin. And I'm like, man, this ain't gonna work. Anyway, Calvin Nichols was an African American, and I'm like, man, Calvin. And anybody know my sponsor? It's me and my sponsor is like Jesse Jackson and Rush Limbaugh. You ain't talking about anybody. Does anybody know my sponsor, Dave Brady? I tell you, I love that man. When I first just that day, I'm like, man, it ain't gonna work, you know, because I still was in that mindset of that old prejudice, not just racial, but the old prejudice doing things my way. And I was brought up from the other side of the tracks. And we wasn't all too for sure about you people. When I first met Dave, I never forget what he had on. He made an impression on. He had a shirt and a tie and some nice dress pants. See, I always respect people that dress nice. Try to the best of my ability. And when we first started talking, and we go to our first meeting, and I don't know that my sponsors deflating my ego at the point in time. All I think is that he's yelling at me. My very first meeting with my sponsor, we get in the meeting, and I'm used to doing things on my own, man, you know. Well, I'm free. I'm in a meeting. What's wrong with getting up in a meeting and pouring coffee and going out and smoking cigarettes and, you know, in and out, you know, and that's what I did my very first meeting with my sponsor. And on the way home, he asked me something. He said, Byron, what are you here for? What do you want from us? Why are you here? I said, I'm here for an AA meeting. He said, it looked like you're here to drink coffee and smoke cigarettes to me. I said, man, he's pretty cool. But what he was doing, he said, you know, we don't get up in a meeting about the hugs and hugs. I never heard of that. I've never been taught that. I may have seen it, but I probably made fun of the people. But what did he explain to me why? He said, Byron, there may be somebody there that may need to hear the message. Instead of you getting in and up and in and out and interrupting everything, there may be somebody that may want to hear the message of alcoholics and animals. And that's the last time that I've been up in a meeting of alcoholics and animals, except one time. One of my favorite part of the book is that it says that every now and then you may have to fight them. Not my choice, but we had to, you know, we had to remove a gentleman for our meeting. And we had every right to remove this gentleman from our meeting, interrupting our meeting. And so that's the only time I got up in the meeting of alcoholics and animals to this day. And so my sponsor was telling me things, and he was deflating my ego. But it sounded like he was yelling at me, putting me down, and all that. And I remember going on from a meeting, and I said, well, can you stop and let me get some cigarettes like that? And he looked at me. He said, no, I'm not a cop. Whoa. He's serious, ain't he? I was going to give you $2 on gas. But what my sponsor was doing, he was introducing me to a new way of life. I never forget one of the things that my sponsor asked me. He said, Byron, what are you running from? Why are you been running in and out of alcoholics now? What's going on there? For the first time in my life, I believe that I was honest with another human being. So I don't know what I'm running from, but I know that I've damaged a lot of people. I've ruined a lot of relationships. And I love those two little girls, and I'm not able to see. And he said, well, my partner, what we're going to do is we're going to do a plan of action. And we started working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know. My mind told me that when my sponsor told me to go tell him myself, in the child support agency that he just wanted to be, he just wanted to be, add another to sit, another brother in jail.
I don't know.
Like, man, they're going to take me to prison. You know why I thought that? Because I was guilty. Now, I know that's deep, but I was guilty because I hadn't paid child support in a number of years, and I owed about $13,000, $14,000 back in child support. I was on the run. And I've said many times, by God, I'm not paying them anything. They don't deserve it. Look how they treated me. And I believed that for many years. But my sponsor had me go turn myself in a child support agency, and I did. For the first time in my life, I was having faith. And I don't know that. For the first time, I'm having faith that this process will work. And all the judge wanted to know is, was I working? Now, that was a, hey, they want a little bit too much here, don't they? I did start working. The very first job that I got was the very first place where I went to that offered me a job. And I started working. I was making minimum wage. And then I started paying this child support back. To me, see, that was my money. It wasn't their money. But my sponsor said, no, idiot, it's their money. All they want is their money. So, it took me 8 years of standing alcoholics and house and being consistent to pay that $14,000 back. I did not see an income tax check in 8 years. For 8 years. You laugh about that. I didn't like it at the time. But the freedom that I got from that, of taking some actions and doing something different. There's not enough money. There's not enough words. There's nothing that can pay and that where I can have that freedom to where I can sleep at night. And that is just one of the many of the processes that have started this process, this lifelong process of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just only gave you that small example of the actions that my sponsor gave me in order to trust you. In order to, if you'd have told me that this is where I would have found God in AA, I would have told you. But it was only through the actions and believing you that it'll work. I had no faith when I got to you, good people. And so my sponsor would give me some actions to take to start this amend process. I haven't did much right in Alcoholics Anonymous over the last almost 20 years, but I never forgive when I did my first fifth step with my sponsor. I never completed anything. I barely made it out of high school. Now I did that. But I never completed anything 100%. And I remember writing out this four step and doing this fifth step with my sponsor. And there were some things on that that I just wasn't too for sure about. But discussing with another human being. I gave it a shot. And it was one of the first things that I accomplished of having faith in God and you good people that maybe I can stay sober. Maybe I can stay sober if I start doing some things different. For many years, like I have shared with you tonight, I've stayed on the fringes of Alcoholics Anonymous and just sit in your seat and take space. And each time, I may have not gotten drunk that night, but each time the thought would come that, man, maybe I can handle it this time. Maybe it'll be different this time. And each time I fail, because see, I'm one of these alcoholics that Bill talks about in the big book. It's only one time because it's the hopeless. And I fought that for a long, long time. So, thank God that my sponsor had the knowledge of what he was dealing with and who he was dealing with. My sponsor didn't. He never, and still today, I hate to, when I call my sponsor, I hate to even talk to him about my wife because he never agreed with my wife. He never agreed with me. He always takes my wife's side. You know, if you want to know how I'm doing, don't ask me. Ask my wife. But here's the opposite, too. If you want to know how she's doing, ask me. And I'd be glad to tell you. No. It's been a journey. It's been a journey. I can go on and on and tell you about the men process, which I really, really believe. And I've been watching this in my own group. The more complete I make this men process, the freer I get, the freer I become. And the more people that I go down that list and make these amends to, I can see the people that's doing that. That's a change that happens to you. And so, like I said, I can go on and on tonight. I had the privilege and honor of sitting with my mother and my grandmother in their last days of their lives. I don't know anything much spiritual than sitting with my mother and my grandmother as they go through the process of dying. See, I would have never had faith in order to do that. But what you good people have gave me is enough faith and a relationship with God. It can't be touched. I didn't come here for that. I came here to take, and take. And what you told me is that, Barry, you're going to have to change. And thank God for that. Thank God that I had the people in my life. See, my sponsor don't demand nothing that I change. Alcoholics Anonymous demand that I change. And I have to change. And I got some great examples in this room that I have been watching for a number of years. And it's been a privilege and honor walking behind the gentlemen and the ladies that I know that's on this path before me. What a privilege and honor. I don't have to create anything. All I have to do is stay smaller than my sponsor and smaller than my own group. And I get to live a full and purpose life. That today, I got the grace of God. And today, I get to enjoy those two little girls that I walked out on. There's something about it when we have that conversation when they say, Daddy. See, it didn't used to be that way. But there's something about that. When they say that magical word, that, thank you, God. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And with that, I close. Thank you, Mike.